Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Welcome back to the IL Preps Podcast. I am Terry Foy. Joining this podcast from the parking lot at Dick's Sporting Goods, where I am watching the World Series of Youth Lacrosse, talking to Ty Zanders, as always, who is enjoying his dead period. Ty, we are about halfway through the summer of 2018, and oh my, here we are.
Yeah, no, it's, I definitely love this time off. I think just kind of hit the reset button and catch our breaths a little bit. And, we've watched a lot of lacrosse over the last couple of weeks, and some of the best lacrosse all summer. So definitely fired up to have some time off, but also looking forward to getting back out there. It's very weird when you go kind of 2 days without lacrosse. You get a little anxious and just pumped for what's ahead, and kind of fun to look back at what we've seen in the last, like, you know, really 10 days. Really a crazy, crazy stretch for recruiting.
We're going to start with the event that led directly into the dead period, that being the Under Armour All-America lacrosse game. The South emerging as 22-15 victors over the North. Nikki Solomon named the game MVP with 4 goals. Mike Sisselberger, the faceoff specialist, heading to Lehigh, was a dominating performance and truly a star in that one as well. Who were some of the other guys that stood out to you, and what were some of your impressions coming away from the senior game?
Yeah, I think in general, kind of have to start with the kid that I've watched a lot of in BJ Farrar. And, you know, you and I have seen him a ton over the years, and certainly what strikes everybody first is just how versatile and athletic he is. And that kind of skill set is going to, you know, bode very well, you know, for his future, but definitely in a all-star game like this, you know, where you can really just push transition. I think he had probably 7 ground balls and, put up 1 and 2. And it was just fun to watch him just fly up and down that field. You know, I had a little deja vu to some past semifinals and championships that his McDonough Eagles played in, watching him make some very similar plays. And, BJ was fun to watch. A lot of fun to watch that night. And I don't know where he fits at Penn, like what kind of role he'll have, if we'll still kind of go back and forth between a short stick and long stick. But I know that he'll make an impact because he's just too talented to not see the field. He's a big one. I also like what I saw out of some attackmen. You know, Nikki Solomon, obviously MVP. He dropped 4 goals, often in the right place at the right time, and had a nice little chemistry with Joey Epstein, who had 3 goals on 8 shots, and then Jacob Kelly, who had 1 and 2. Just really like that attack unit. And, I think it's so important to realize when watching this game, especially people that may not see a whole lot of these recruits as much as we have. But, you know, you take a lot of the grain of salt. Obviously, a performance like Mike Sisselberger stands out. But we're looking at defensemen. It's very hard to kind of have that defensive chemistry. It's just not going to be there as much as you would in a regular game. So very important to kind of look at great performances like Tanner Hay and Will Bowen and guys like that defensively. Knowing that they'll probably, you just saw kind of a glimpse of what they bring to the table. And if you throw them into a very settled environment, structured environment rather, then, they'll thrive. But love what they did. And I think defensively, Jose Boyer was just terrific. Had that nice little Rusty Gatecheck takeaway and then maybe a half dozen ground balls. So just kind of pumped to see him at Notre Dame. I feel like he will step right into John Sexton's spot and thrive for the Irish. What were your takeaways from that game?
Well, I think for me, the play of the game was Patrick Birkinshaw's save, and I think that's appropriate because making 13 saves on the afternoon or the evening, I thought, you know, he was the best goalie in terms of showing a versatility, in terms of the types of shots he was capable of saving, as well as the way that he managed the defense and the way that he settled in. And yes, there's probably something to be said for the fact that the game wasn't really in question or the outcome wasn't in question by the time he took the field. But I thought that, you know, the University of Virginia is getting a really special goalie coming out of Brunswick, and I think he's going to be able to compete for time right away. Additionally, I thought, you know, kind of moving along the position groups, attackman Bryce Clay, a lefty out of Michigan who is going to Michigan, and I think there had always been, you know, maybe just like a few slight question marks as to how he steps up or holds up against the best competition. He put in 3 goals. I thought that was a validating performance. And then you mentioned some of the really impressive athletes in terms of both quickness and smoothness. For me, some of the big guys they were able to get up and down the field, the size of some of these guys really stood out. Evan Zinn, just a monster midfielder. Nick Loring, once again, he paired with Isaiah Dawson is just an absolute beast at that midfield position. And I thought Peter Fiorini going to Syracuse is another one who just standing on the sidelines, I was like, wow, that is an imposing player. So, you know, those were probably my two takeaways to go along with what you laid out as well.
Yeah, no, I thought all those guys played great. I don't know how I didn't mention Pat Birkinshaw. I saw him, you know, live this spring, was very impressed, and have watched him a ton over the years with the Clips in Brunswick. It's funny. I mean, I think that I've certainly been very high on Alex Rode and what he brings to the table for UVA, but those are two of the best goalies that I've evaluated, you know, and it's back-to-back years. I mean, Birkinshaw and Rode will be a really fun competition. I think you certainly have to throw in you know, Griffin Thompson, who has played very well, you know, at times the Wahoos. So it'll be fun to watch that. I mean, you know, as fantastic as Birkinshaw is, I wouldn't rule out a redshirt year. You know, you really never know, because you can kind of take one guy out of the equation and maybe, you know, hold him off for a year and have him for 4 years. I think that's a pretty intriguing thought, but yeah, love what Berkey did. I mean, 13 saves in the All-Star game is pretty insane, given that it was just a half. So I was really pleased with his performance, and it kind of validated, you know, his spot as number one goalie in my rankings the last couple of years. But, yeah, I think we know how difficult it is to be a netminder in that game. I think it was something like 71 shots on goal on Saturday night on 129 shots. That's just ridiculous. I feel like that's a higher number than what we've seen in the past. You know, some pretty solid sharp shooting there. But I know I'm looking forward to watching this game again. I really like what I saw out of those attackmen that I mentioned. And, yeah, I mean, you mentioned Evan Zinn. Just for Blue Jay fans, you know, and watching that game at Homewood Field, you know, you saw how great Epstein and Zinn played. Knowing what Hopkins loses at attack, a guy like Shaq Stanwyck who held that spot down for 4 years, and then just a ton of middies, certainly Joel Tinney at the forefront there, but they lose 5 or 6 middies that played a ton of minutes. I think Evan Zinn, you know, will probably step in, whether it's the first line or second line, will probably step in and just provide a really, really good shooting presence there. I mean, he just shoots the ball with so much confidence, and you know, it's just a threat with his size, his range, you know, coming down the alley. So it was fun to watch him play, and I know he's one of the guys I'm looking forward to watch. You know, looking forward to watching over the next couple of years, him and Epstein.
You mentioned the redshirt opportunity or idea, and you know, it reminds me a little bit of what we saw at Maryland when Kyle Bernlar came in. I believe he was an Under Armour All-American, and Nico Amato was the established starter there. Bernlar took that redshirt year and turned into a 2-year starter after Amato graduated, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So it's not, you know, without precedent.
Yeah, yeah, and you can never have too many goalies, you know, but I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens there. I think the thing about Birkinshaw is that his outlets are just, you know, off the charts. He's one of the better clearing goalies that I've seen, and we know how important that is. And I've written this a million times, but we know how important that is in that UVA system that's very fast-paced. You have to have a keeper that can get the ball up and out and trigger, you know, those fast-break opportunities and you know, kind of create chaos there. I think that was one of Rhodes' downfalls, and I know just kind of talking to the UVA staff, that's something that Rhodes working a whole lot on this summer and will continue to do so in the fall. So with Birkinshaw, I think that he provides that, and you know, it was fun to see him between the pipes, you know, making those 13 saves on Saturday.
last comment I'll make about the senior game, tying a bow on Virginia's incoming class, I thought that both Jeff Connor and Jack Simmons had one highlight reel play, Simmons with a righty snipe on the run down the alley, and then I believe Connor with a rollback up top, two players that really showed glimpses of genius.
Yeah, and they'll also, you know, be in the running for some time there. I mean, Simmons just is another just lights out shooter left and right. So I like what he can do. And Connor, I think, you know, I don't know what he finished with for his career, but just video game numbers, you know, up in the Central League in Philly. So quite a class for the Wahoos. And you know, I feel really good about kind of the different recruiting classes that we saw, you know, on display, knowing that, you know, with some of these top classes, there's a lot of depth, you know, and guys that didn't get to make this game will play a ton, you know, going forward. So, yeah, it was enjoyable to watch the culmination of these guys' career and, you know, really, really talented class that we'll dig more into over the next couple months, you know, working the recruiting issue, but you know, always, just a wonderful night kind of watching the top 44 play in front of a great crowd.
So the class of 2018 is the present, but the future, the classes of 2019 and 20, were on display. Baltimore won the highlight division, which is that older group of 19s and 20s, and the West took the Under Armour underclass command division, which is comprised of players from the classes of 21 and 22. Ty, just, you know, kind of bare bones thoughts to tee us up in terms of what were the big takeaways from the weekend?
Yeah, you know, a lot of thoughts, you know, throw in there. I think that, you know, I felt like Baltimore and DC were two of the, you know, better teams on paper. And I think that we were able to see that, you know, with them earning the top two seeds and winding up in the championship, you know, against each other. And just a fun game. I think that there were a lot of the country's, you know, best players at that event. But if you look at DC and Baltimore, what stands out to me is this group of 2020s. I think between, you know, a guy like, you know, Jack Stuzin and Daniel Kelly and Jack Corris, all three members of FCA 2020, a group that's been dominant this summer. And then, you know, you throw in some solid players for DC. I was just blown away with George Alvarez, you know, goalie from St. John's College in D.C. and players for the Baltimore Crabs. He was lights out. I think that, you know, he was not able to make the all-tournament team that went to Liam Enitman, but Alvarez probably would have been my second vote there. You know, it was a coming-out party for him. I watched him play a whole lot, but really felt like he thrived, and I think that will be huge for him when it comes to his recruitment starting in September. So, I liked what he could do. I thought Will Coletti, as we mentioned, these service academies can contact 2020s on July 1st. And right away that morning, he made a commitment to Army. And I know just talking to some guys locally that have worked with him, he always wanted to wind up at West Point. You know, he went to their camps for years. So it wasn't a huge shock to see him make that commitment, but it's a big one for the Black Knights as they kind of build momentum with that recruiting class. I think he's an outstanding get, and he played very well for that DC team throughout the weekend, along with a guy like Ben Weyer, who you watched recently at Uplax. He is an LSM who creates some havoc out of St. Stephen's St. Agnes, Northern Virginia, plays for Black Wolf, and he's part of a just a ridiculous Ohio State recruiting class right now. I like what he can do. I know you've watched him, and you know, I like this 2020 class in Maryland and Long Island the most, so it's fun to watch those guys play.
Yeah, you mentioned Liam Enitman, and for me, he was the player that really popped the most. You know, that Long Island team didn't live up to expectations given what they had done last year, winning the command division, or at least the, you know, the younger group of players. But I thought that, you know, he really showed to me not just a shot-stopping ability, but also the vibe that he gave the defensive players around him. I thought was really special and something that Notre Dame fans should be really looking forward to 2 years from now.
Yeah, no, and he's fiery. I mean, I hadn't really seen that out of him. He, you know, he was getting fired up when he made a big save, and when, you know, one of his teammates made a big play on the other end, you know, he was clapping. He was bringing his D guys in and just really excited. So it was cool to see that. He sat behind Andrew Bonafide, who played in that Under Armour game on Saturday, and you know, there have been a lot of great goalies coming out of Chaminade. I think, you know, Edmund's the next one in line, and that was some of the best that, that he played. It's crazy. I mean, for him to be a one-year starter, I think he'll go in Notre Dame and see some, you know, contend for some minutes. So it'll be interesting to see that competition as well. And, you know, I liked watching him play. I think Long Island's probably very mad at me that I cursed them by picking them to win that tournament. And, you know, they really weren't anywhere close to it. You know, they were on the other end of a tough loss to Connie in the opener. And, you know, they had showed some flashes. I watched in Southwest and saw what they could do, but the makeup of their team, it was tough. I think that, you know, Brendan O'Neill was a little banged up, and a lot of these guys in general were just exhausted. I know their faceoff guy, they took one faceoff guy, was at Maverick Showtime all week, going from, you know, having to take dozens and dozens of draws to going into what is always the hottest weekend of the year and, you know, just taking all the faceoffs for Long Island. That's tough. But, you know, we'll see. I think that, as we mentioned, that 2020 class in Long Island is just loaded. But, you know, we'll see what they can do, you know, next year. Because I know they're not fired up about what, you know, what they're able to do over the weekend, but showed very well individually.
And at the younger level, Tyler Buchner, who has been one of the more discussed recruits in recent memories, a 21 who committed to Michigan to play lacrosse right around the time of the recruiting rule changes last April, and has since skyrocketed up the football charts, received offers from places such as Alabama, Georgia, UCLA, Stanford, probably not going to end up playing college lacrosse, but was described to me as a man among boys in that West command team.
Yeah, so I didn't get to focus a whole lot on that class or on that command division, but watched Buchner in flashes and was just blown away. I mean, the kid is probably 6'2", 200, and, you know, everyone and their mother is after him. You know, SEC, Notre Dame, USC. But it was fun to kind of watch him, you know, play with confidence, dodge with confidence, throughout the weekend. It was enjoyable to watch that West coming together really nicely, and a lot of North on, but a kid like Nick DeMeo just lit it up. And, I think this is my eighth or ninth year, just, you know, keep it very light. And it was very good lacrosse. I think, you know, they were kind of really seeing for the first time. I mean, a kid that stands out to me is Ryan McKenzie, you know, out of Christian Brothers, plays for Rick Beardsley up there. He was a force. I mean, just a part of a really good midfield class at Showtime, and was making plays in both ends, and hard-nosed athlete, played both ways, you know, shot it with confidence, both his left and right. I think that he's a kid that could probably play at an Ivy or Duke or Notre Dame with what his grades are and what he's built his profile you know, up to be, and was also at Under Armour, you know, this past weekend for the Upstate team. So McKenzie was a kid that really stood out to me. And, you know, I know that we'll have our list of standouts, you know, in the next 24 hours or so, but what a week it was. I mean, it's such a great event. You know, I know I'll always be back. Really enjoyed watching the 21s as well. You know, not a class, as I mentioned, that I'm watching a ton of this summer with these current recruiting rules. But there's so much talent in that group, and it was a good time watching them in the All-Star game.
And before that, I mean, you know, Ty, it's been almost 3 weeks since we've had a preps podcast, and it's not for lack of trying. It's because we've been so busy that we were struggling to connect. So just kind of running through some of the events prior to that, NLF Elite 120, it's a really interesting format. Six teams playing in downtown Baltimore, Latrobe Park. It's pretty close to where you and I both live, pretty close to Under Armour's headquarters. And it kicks off a weekend that then kind of dovetails right into Crab Feast. You and Dan Abram were at Crab Feast. But first, what were your takeaways from Elite 120?
Yeah, I think it met my expectations. I mean, it was really I know that it's in its third year, but last year it really you know, had almost all of the best 2020s in the country, you know, at least from the NLF clubs. And, you know, I know a lot of the college coaches I talked to felt like it may have been, you know, one of the more talent-laden, if not the most talent-laden, you know, individual showcase of the summer. So I think that, you know, the product last year was very strong. It was hot as can be. This year we had a little bit of rain, you know, which changes things up. But I was very impressed. I think that I mean, as we've all written a million times, Brendan O'Neill is the real deal, and all he did in game one at Elite 120 is, I think it took him like 5 minutes to score two, you know, scored twice, and then a few minutes later he's putting the ball in the back of the net again, and then second half begins and he's doing it again. You know, he can make plays left and right. He's so big and so talented, and it was just a joy to watch him make plays. I think that everyone's talking about how loaded this 2020 group is, and a lot of the best players were there. Some really athletic middies. I felt like it was a coming out party for a few of them. Cole Erickson, Brody Firestein, two guys that I wrote about. We saw some great face-off battles. John Dixon, Justin Wheatfelt, you know, stood out to me. Dixon from Massachusetts and Noble and Grenow, and Wheatfelt from the Eclipse Club, and New Canaan High up in Connecticut. So a lot of talent there, a lot of guys that I've seen, but just a nice little day. I mean, the kids get to tour the Under Armour facilities. I know you and I have both spent some time, you know, doing that, and had to be a pretty cool experience for these kids, you know, just 15, 16 years old, getting to see just an unbelievable Under Armour campus, and then play in front of, I mean, 40, 50 college coaches for a few hours.
And then it was on to Crab Feast. What'd you see there?
Yeah, I think, you know, Crab Feast is fun. I mean, you really have, you know, almost all the best clubs in the country. I think it's something like 12, 12 fields. And, you know, it was the usual suspects. I think that, you know, the FCA squad was really impressive. You know, the Crabs played very well. I liked watching more of Edge. But yeah, I think it was a lot of the same NLF teams that played really well. And I know I focused a lot in that 2020 group, some of the guys that I mentioned. You know, I enjoyed watching that Mad Lax team play the Crabs. It's such a fun rivalry to see every year. On the 2019 side, you had Connor Schellenberger and Robert Shane. And Crab side, you had a ton of talent. So very closely contested game. I know Dan and I, you know, wrote that up. So be sure to check that recap out on InsideLacrosse.com. We have a ton of content up right now. Crab Feast, I think that was like probably my seventh or eighth time going, and never disappoints. You know, but yeah, I just kind of catch my breath. A lot of events for us these last few weeks. You know, what have you seen, Terry?
Well, yeah, so I wanted to mention that we had Doug McSorley on site at Sweet Lax Invitational that same weekend, and he came away really impressed by Hunter Jaronski, a 2019 defenseman from the Academy of New Church and playing for Dukes, who's heading to Johns Hopkins. Michael Page, another 2019 pole from Hun, playing for Boostar, who's heading to Syracuse. And then Jack Brennan, a 2019 attackman from Irondequoit, who is playing for Sweet Lax, who is going to Maryland. So he wrote up all of those player evaluations. There were 12 of them from that event in Pittsburgh, New York. You mentioned that the amount of recruiting content that's currently on InsideLacrosse.com is pretty unbelievable. I believe our number of evaluated players in just June of 2018 is over 400 now. So it's a little bit hard to sift through, but that's exactly why we created this recruiting database. And you can find it all at InsideLacrosse.com/recruiting. You mentioned that I had been at UpLax and Baltimore Simmer Kavekoff. You mentioned I was really impressed by Ben Weyer playing for Black Wolf at UpLax. And at Baltimore Simmer Kickoff, one of the players who I had an opportunity to watch for the first time was Conestoga 2020 defenseman Scott Smith, who's committed to Johns Hopkins. I thought he just had the whole package. And it was really interesting sitting next to a couple of college coaches, and as soon as they saw him play, they were like, that kid's committed to a Big Ten school. Of course, you look it up, there it is. So clearly the curb appeal on display there. I got another opportunity to get eyes on Brennan Grimes at that event. And, you know, one of the takeaways that I took from that hasn't been discussed, and I'm going to concede that I'm wrong about this because I said similar things about Pat Spencer when he was coming out of Boys Latin, and that didn't end up coming to fruition. But his, like, body type and the way he runs and a lot of other aspects of the style of his game suggest to me that he could play midfield in addition to playing attack. And I think that's, you know, just kind of an interesting thing to keep in the back of your head, depending on how some of this stuff shakes out. And then as far as some of the other guys who impressed, there's a midfielder playing for Burning River from Padua High School outside of Cleveland, which is a place that I'm very familiar with, named Ben Starkey, who's going to Robert Morris, who I was really impressed by as well.
Yeah, and then, you know, kind of going back to Grimes, I like the point you're making. I think that it definitely is intriguing to look at some of this talent in the 19-20 classes and think that they're, you know, they maybe could end up playing some midfield. I look at a guy like Connor Schellenberger, and I feel a very similar way. You know, I think that both those guys, Grimes and Schellenberger, are so fluid, you know, kind of dodging you know, from up top and from the wings. I think that they're not really that, like, that traditional, like, ex-attackman. They make so much happen from all spots of the field. You know, I love watching those guys play. I know Grimes had a very good championship game at Under Armour. I think he had 2 goals, maybe 3, and, you know, got the championship game MVP. Nice little interview with Booker Corrigan, always a, you know, highlight for high school kids. So, you know, yeah, I know we'll have eyes on Grimes going forward as these events, you know, trickle in after that period.
And then the last event that we're going to talk to was basically the next event after the last time you and I talked, the Inside Lacrosse Recruiting Invitational Session 1. We had 4 different winners in the 2019 division. Venom, a team out of Richmond that's been playing together, really riding this group for the last 4 years, came out on top, led by attackman Drew Miller and midfielder Andrew Crook. In the 2020 division, the one that you watched most closely, Edge emerged victorious. They had a really well-rounded offense led by attackman Rory Graham and Carter Begley, and then midfielder Andrew Dalton.
Yeah, it was really fun watching these kids, you know, for multiple games. I think that, you know, I think it's a given at this point that the Canadians are going to be, you know, largely finishers. But a guy like Dalton is a young midfielder. He's a 19 that will reclass, take a PG year and join the 20 group. He is such a, you know, fluid feeder from up top and made some great plays, some no-look passes, some very creative, you know, looks on his part. So, you know, all 3 of those guys are names to watch going forward and guys I know will also watch, you know, these next few weeks. So, you know, have to keep an eye out for the Edge boys, but also Team 24/7. I had not watched that club before, so to see them perform, you know, and really, I mean, they beat Edge in game one, or day one rather, and then, you know, went on to meet Edge again in the championship and really, really impressed. I love what Tucker Goodell could do, AJ Todaro, Colby Bars, and I think it was kind of validating for all of us to go and see them turn around at Crab Feast and knock off, you know, a pretty talented Crabs team in the first game of the day. So, you know, love what Ryan Flanagan's doing with that 24/7 team down in the Charlotte area. And, you know, got to keep our eyes out for them.
And continuing on with that 24/7 team, they won the 2021 division. Ty Keaton and Jack Hines were kind of the pace setters at the attack. And then in the 2022 division, Dallas Select, just an unbelievable mix of athleticism, big defensemen, a couple of really, really good and fast midfielders, a good attackman in Treese Kimmel, but it was faceoff specialist Aiden Smith, who was just absolutely dominant and is absolutely a player to watch in that 2022 class coming out of the Dallas area.
Yeah, no, and you know, it was enjoyable to watch those guys play, and you know, I think we're fired up for session 2 of the ILRI coming next week.
Well, you teed me up perfectly, Ty, because the dead period will end on Thursday, and then the recruiting scene will pick back up. We are going to be on the field at Cedar Lane Park in Bel Air, Maryland, to watch session 2 of the ILRI. The club profiles are already pouring in, so make sure to check out InsideLacrosse.com to see and learn more about the teams that will be competing. That's July 9, 10, and 11, and then it continues on from there. You've got some travel. We're going to be trading spots. You're coming out west shortly after that.
I am. I will be out west for the Adrenaline event. They'll have a little individual showcase on Friday going right into the Adrenaline Shootout. Right outside, or I think it's right in Colorado Springs. So I went to this a couple years ago, and I think going back to my original point about how strong this 18 class was out west, it'll be fun to kind of find some new faces in the 19s and 20s, you know, out there. Always a good event. And then I'm off to Long Island, and then we'll have some events in the Baltimore area. I mean, it's just crazy once you get to the dead period, just kind of how quickly things progress, you know, and how things kind of, you know, just slow down a little bit, and the summer's over in the blink of an eye.
We'll be at STX Rising and FLG in 3D. We will be at the NLF Club National Championships. And then, of course, the end of July brings the third annual Epic Inside Lacrosse Boys Committed Academy. We're super fired up for that. It's going to be a great event as well.
Awesome. Well, Terry, enjoy the rest of the World Series of Youth Lacrosse. And I'll be enjoying a little time off on the 4th of July. And I think by the time this podcast will be up, we'll probably have another dozen or two dozen evaluations up on IL.
Make sure to check insidelacrosse.com/recruiting and follow IL Preps on Twitter and Instagram to stay up on the latest.
All right, we'll see you out there.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.